Welcome to Kidding Around, a kid health podcast for everyone. Parents, grandmas, teachers, anyone who touches the life of a child. I'm your host, Dr. Candace, a board-certified pediatrician and a mom of two. I sit down with expert guests to answer your questions about all things baby, child, and teen. So if you're wondering, why does she do that? Or how can I get rid of this rash? I got you. Hello, welcome to Kidding Around. I'm Dr. Candace, and as usual, thank you so much for listening. Today we are talking teen dating violence, a very serious topic, also known as intimate partner violence, dating abuse, all of those things. I just want to share a stat with you. According to the CDC, the 2013 National Youth Behavior Survey found that 10% of high school students reported physical victimization and 10% reported sexual victimization from a dating partner in the 12 months before they were surveyed. So that was recent. When they were surveyed within that year, they had been victimized physically or sexually. That's 1 out of 10. 1 out of 10 teens. Too many. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about this today, and I have an expert for you, a relationship trauma expert. The brilliant and beautiful Miss Janie Lacey is here. Thank you, Miss Janie, for coming today. She is a licensed mental health counselor, psychotherapist, and TV commentator, and she is the CEO and owner of Life Counseling Solutions. And she's going to help break this down for us. Now, I was just sharing with Janie something that I learned right before we start taping. A video of a rapper whom I don't know, Young NBA, I think it's the name, of him physically assaulting his teenage, she's 17 years old, I think, girlfriend in a hotel lobby. He has been arrested, rightfully so, but what floored me was that she came on social media and took up for him and tried to retract what everybody saw. She's caught in a circle of violence. And if she realizes it or not, it's not worth it. So we're going to talk about that because there are too many teens dealing with something like that, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to talk about first, how do you define dating violence? Obviously, it's different for different people. Mm-hmm. Oh, he just pushed me once, or he calls me names, or control. Mm-hmm. We don't see it as abuse unless I got a bruise or something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how do we define it? Let's break it down for the teens.
So if we make it very simple, there's two hallmarks that we look at. Not only the perpetration of violence, but the threat of violence. Mm-hmm. Because you don't necessarily have to actually have put the bruise on, right, on her or him in order for it to be a violent relationship or a violent act. So we're looking at the perpetration, that means that there actually is a violent act where there's a physical touch or the threat of is what we look at.
Absolutely. And so what does a healthy, let's share what a healthy relationship looks like. Mm-hmm. Because I think some people, unfortunately, have grown up in an environment of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And so it's very much normalized for them. Mm-hmm. My mom and my dad fought all the time. Mm-hmm. They stuck in there. That's real love.
Right.
She stayed.
Exactly.
They've been together 50 years and they're so sweet to each other now. I just hang in there. All of these different scenarios that make it okay. Mm-hmm. It's not okay.
Right.
Let's share what a healthy relationship looks like. And they are real people. People have healthy relationships.
There are people that have healthy relationships, but we can't talk about healthy relationships unless we talk about what you just said. A lot of times our models are not necessarily healthy, but they become normalized. Mm-hmm. And sometimes our parents can still be together and they could be committed to being committed, but they weren't committed to a healthy relationship. Yeah. So the first thing I always like to educate our young girls is just because grandma or mom has been in her relationship with dad or grandpa for 30 or 35 years, it doesn't necessarily mean it was healthy. Mm-hmm. So first we have to define that. Commitment doesn't necessarily mean I'm healthy because I could be committed to eating ice cream. Doesn't mean it's healthy for me.
That's right.
So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is understanding, without a doubt, we look for love where we also feel the most deficit. Mm-hmm. So when we kind of look at the parent, the system, not to ever blame us as parents, but we look at the system, what is it that we have to be good enough parents for our children? So when we look at teens, we also have to look at the environment that they come from, the relationships that they were exposed to, the relationships they have with mom or dad. If mom was a single mom in the home, and I'm not saying all of those things define, but they can make her a little bit more susceptible to being in certain types of relationships. Because you have, you know, there's a, for example, last year there was someone that I was working with that was in a domestic violent relationship, and she was only 14.
Wow.
But when we look at the situation, she had two parents in the household. So it wasn't a stereotypical, you know, mom working. She had two parents in the household who were career professionals. And she had a high standard. They had a high standard on her to perform academically and to do all these other sports. So I just want to dispel the myth. It's not someone who's neglected or someone who doesn't necessarily feel loved or sees violence. Sometimes it could be the other end, is that we're not necessarily knowing how to love, but we're learning how to teach our children how to perform. Because then also in the relationship, she's also going to learn how to find a soft space, because I can't have a soft space home because my parents are putting pressure on me to to get the good grades or to do well in volleyball and do these all these things because potentially the parents themselves come from a different generation. So then now we roll over and we create a different problem. So when we look at a healthy relationship, there's two hallmarks that I always try to teach teens in a very practical sense, and that's honesty and respect. And first helping them decide what honesty is about. Because if sometimes we can have these ideals of what honesty and respect look like. So respect for some people, or teens in particular, will say, well, then if I want to do something, he just needs to respect it. You know, okay, what does all that mean? You know, so we have to unpack that. So can I be honest, meaning can I be myself?
Okay.
We break it down very simple.
Being authentic.
Being authentic to yourself, but also can I be myself in the eyes of my boyfriend or the person I'm dating, because the first sign of the unhealthiness is he's trying to change who you are. So we look at the healthy relationship. I'm showing up as who I am, and I'm able to be myself, and he likes me for who I am and not who he wants me to be.
So that can be a red flag right there.
Huge red flag.
If he's trying to change you.
So to go down that path really quick, so when we look at the signs of what potentially, when we look at violent relationships with teens, we kind of look back at the red flags that they miss, which is how we can now identify them. And one of those is trying to change the partner. Because sometimes the domestic violence isn't always a male to the female. Sometimes it is a female to male. So I'm trying to be trying to be gender specific. But then if he's trying to change you and say that, you know what, you need to dress like this or you need to do this stuff. Control is usually the first sign. Control and trying to change something. Because if the red flag, the healthy relationship will tell them is the marker, is I can be myself, I can wear what I want to wear, I can be myself because that's how he met me. So I'm showing up my authentic self and that's accepted. So the other side, the red flag would be immediately he's trying to control, he's trying to change. Because especially when we're educating our teens, we have to speak in a language in which they can understand. So, and those are those easy signs. And then the control will start to increase, right? Because if you're saying, oh, okay, well now, yeah, maybe I shouldn't wear that color. Maybe I shouldn't wear my skirt that short. And in the beginning, it seems very helpful, but then it starts to increase over time.
Absolutely. And respect.
Yes. So respect says, and this is what it looks like. These are those examples we'll give our teens. Well, I'm going to meet my parents after volleyball practice to go have dinner. Well, no, you can't do that. No. Well, your parents can wait. This is a real example. And then the struggle begins where he's not going to respect not only your time, but who you are, or even the obligations you have. Why are you in volleyball anyway? Volleyball is stupid, right? You start seeing those things. He starts, and I'm just using it, could go either way. He can start tearing down the things that you are, and then you start questioning it, because teens in particular that, not all teens, but teens in particular that are more susceptible to violent behaviors by their partner also have what we call the blossoming of codependency. So that means they learn to put other people before them. And don't we teach our children that to a certain degree, especially if we grow up in a church, right? We learn to have a servant heart and to sacrifice. But if we get those kind of messages twisted, we can get them twisted.
Big time. That's awesome. And so you already went into the next question. Who's at risk for this? What teens are at risk?
So a huge part that we'll see, which is why I wanted to make that example, that it's not necessarily the teen that's coming from not necessarily having resources or that she's home having to raise her kids. Because a lot of times I'll hear people have stereotypes of people that get in a relationship. But actually in our practice, we see it the other way. Where there's two parents in the home, there's professional parents in the house, the kids have potential, they're not wanting for nothing. There's resources in the home and there's opportunities. So it's not, so I want to say it's not necessarily that. So sometimes it could be, am I teaching my children to perform versus understand who they are? Is one area, not all. Mm-hmm. So they learn to perform. So I have to be perfect is the message we'll send our kids.
Perfection.
So they're coming home with the report card and they have a C, but they have A's in everything else. So if we're the parents, well, what happened with the C? Sometimes it's that repetitive message that you have to be perfect and I'm not accepted for who you are. Or we're going to their sports games where I've seen time and time again, and I'm criticizing my daughter for how she volleyed that ball versus telling her what a wonderful job she did. So sometimes the emotional neglect is the word I'm going to use can really seep in, and we don't know what's seeping in because as parents, the parents really think they're doing a good job. You're doing it out of love. I want her to have a better life than me. I want her to have opportunities, but we don't realize we're tearing down the self. So that's what we could be doing. So then she meets the guy, and let's say potentially it's the puppy love, and he really likes her for her. He likes her for who she is. He accepts her for who she is. She doesn't have to change, so she thinks, right? Doesn't have to change. And then that becomes the world, and it becomes more of an addictive type love. So we look at teens in these addictive relationships. Teens that are in addictive love relationships are more likely to have violence in the relationship, but not all violent relationships are addictive relationships. But that susceptibility is, you know what? I always feel like I have to be perfect. I have to perform here. So now I'm with Bob, and he really likes me for who I am. That's one area. And then the other area is that there's a lack of identity. So we look at, again, going back to the parents, we have to be good enough parents. Our children learn who they are by the reflection of our eyes. So are we the parents that we ourselves were emotionally neglected? So we don't know how to love. We cannot love if we have not been loved. And it's just, and it's hard for us as parents to understand that, which is why we have to learn.
Yes, we do.
It's never to blame, you know, who wants to blame us as parents? We don't want to blame our parents, but it's to say, how did I develop and how do I show love, which is why they have books written, Five Love Languages for Teens. They have all these types of resources. So we're looking at someone who's has to be high performance, and the other part is the low self-esteem, doesn't understand who she is, and then we'll have the codependent type relationship. She defines who she is by her partner's affirmation and validation and all of that type of thing, and that becomes the addiction. It's like taking the breadcrumbs. If we don't necessarily are not getting it somewhere else, then he's coming, and I fell in love with him, and he's all that I want. And now you're hooked in that codependence. Well, what we also call trauma bond. So you can get bonded over them in this unhealthy codependent type relationship because we don't know what healthy relationships are. We don't know what honesty, and I'm just using those as hallmarks, honesty and respect really looks like.
That's powerful. So at its foundation, we have to foster our children's identity and self-esteem. We have to give them what they need. Like speaking of the five love languages, those words of affirmation, that quality time, those basic things, that unconditional love. Those are some of those principles, if I can remember. It's been a long time since I read that. But definitely, we have to give them that, because if you don't, somebody else will, and it can become dysfunctional.
So it's
especially with a young person.
It is, and sometimes it's easier to help children get built up. Like my son is five, so every morning he says affirmations. So we are, when we're driving to school, I'm strong, I'm brave, and I'm smart. And I'm like, say it louder, right? So because I want him to take on that voice. So imagine people that didn't have that, that didn't have someone that spoke into them, that now because parents, society, our friends, their voice becomes our voice, especially when we are developing in our teenage years, which is our years we're developing our identity.
So let's give some more reasons why this is so important to overcome this, this violence, this teen dating violence. How can it affect, we sort of talked about how it can affect short term, right in the moment as it begins or during while it's going on. But it can affect you for the rest of your life, long term. Let's talk about a little, those short and long term effects that this has on a teenager.
So one of the main ways I'll see, and I'll kind of just skip ahead. So when I'm working with people in unhealthy relationships, primarily females, but if I'm working with couples in particular, if someone has dealt with teen violence and they have not necessarily had a working progress, meaning that they've worked on themselves and they've done some work around doing the work about who they are and how they've come from, and say they're still just going on with a life. I call them walking
just
wounded.
Just brushed it under the rug. And
exactly. I call them walking wounded because, and I use that word codependency because we then, we can potentially still find our identity in other people. We're looking for the crumbs. We're looking for the validation. We can't be alone. You know, so I'm looking for to adult women in particular. There has to always be someone there because they use them to co-regulate is what we call it, who they are. So in order for me to feel good about myself, I have to make someone else happy and I have to please them. So imagine if that person typically, and I'm using this word lightly, is a narcissist. So they like the world around them, and then you're coming and you want to please them because you want to make someone else happy. I mean, it repeats itself. So we have patterns and we have problems. So the people that have had that happening in their teen relationships where they've been unhealthy, they've been codependent, and they've been violent, as they're walking through their life, in particular, they're going to have a pattern mm-hmm. in relationships versus just a problem.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wow. So further each relationship, you can get yourself in a cycle of that type of relationship over and over and over again.
Right.
And God forbid, if you're really in physical situations, mm-hmm. you can be hurt, you can be killed, mm-hmm. you can be so many bad things.
Right.
We see it all the time.
And this is why this topic in particular mm-hmm. is so important to me. I'm not sure if we've discussed it, but when I was 10 years old, my 19-year-old mm-hmm. sister mm-hmm. was murdered by the hands of two of her two of her children. So mm-hmm. she was had her first child when she was 13. She was in domestic violent relationships mm-hmm. from 13 and had four children by the age of 19.
Yeah.
And she was murdered at 19 because she was in these domestic violent type relationships and was all she knew. And in particular, trying to leave the relationship became difficult. Mm-hmm. So she was murdered on her way out, which is why also when we kind of look at these teens, when they create this pattern, they get intimidated and then they get drawn back because of two things that perpetrators will play on, and that's guilt and shame. Mm-hmm. They don't know that, but they'll feel like, you know, how it'll play out practically is, well, maybe I deserve that. Or maybe, you know what, he was right. I did have an attitude. You know, the teens mm-hmm. will take on that responsibility.
Rationalize.
They'll rationalize mm-hmm. why he did what he did. And they will say, well, he only pushed me,
right.
you know, or he only smacked me once.
Right.
You know, and it's like
all those excuses.
All of those excuses.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Unfortunately, I've been there, done that.
mm-hmm.
So advice for parents, and this is the big one because everything I do is about prevention.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we do need to help you when you're in it and get you out. So we're talking about that too. But I just want you to just not even have to experience that.
Mm-hmm.
So advice for parents and for teens to prevent this, recognizing it when if you feel like your child is going through it, how to help them out. How do you intervene without being dysfunctional yourself and driving them to that person? Because mm-hmm, I see mm-hmm, that,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a loaded question.
No, it is a loaded question, but I'll break it up in two parts. The first part, and many parents, it's hard for us to hear this, but we ourselves have to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not, that's okay. That just means we have to understand what are our blind spots, because we will lead our teens and our children from our blind spots more than we will from our awareness places.
Mm-hmm.
So most parents sometimes that are afraid to have the conversation is because they haven't necessarily addressed their own issues
yeah.
around it.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that, you know, it brings up a lot of shame. So how can I tell my daughter to get out of this abusive relationship when I'm in an abusive relationship with her dad? Or I was in that abusive relationship myself.
Right.
So the first thing I say is understand your values and your belief system and try to be as congruent with them as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way that you can combat that, the way that the teen will combat that is if you're giving her or him advice and they're like, well, mom, I just saw dad push you yesterday. Mm-hmm. I mean, so who are you to talk, you know? So making sure
yeah.
you're congruent as possible. But the second part is to have a conversation with them around your values and your beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And for teens in particular, to not do it in a conversation like this where you're looking them in the face and you're trying to have this serious conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Teens are more open when it's more of a relaxed conversation. So what I try to coach my parents to do is watch a show that they may be watching. What are the teens watching? Because
mm-hmm.
it will present itself.
Yes, it will.
And mm-hmm. in these shows, sit and learn what they're listening to, what they're watching, and then understand their viewpoint before you push them on yours. Because when they're a teenager in particular and you're trying to address an abusive relationship they may be in, they already have their belief system. So they're not five where we can train them up
right.
and influence them.
Mm-hmm.
They now have their own thoughts about it.
Right.
So you need to first seek, you know, I always say Stephen Covey, you need to seek first to understand and then
yes.
to understand where they're at, what are their belief systems. So
yes.
if you're watching that television show with them and let's say there is a domestic abuse situation, well, what do you think about that?
Mm-hmm.
And stay quiet. Don't be quick to put in your opinion. First,
mm-hmm.
understand where they're at, and then talk about if you do have experience and you've overcome it. I always tell parents, share that.
Be honest right?
about it.
Yeah.
You know, that when I was
so
14, I fell in love, and you know what? I thought he loved me, and share with them. And then
right.
she will be like, Mom,
mm-hmm.
right? But then she's going to realize you understand on a deeper level.
Right.
So, first, is to be as congruent as possible. Second is to have a direct conversation that's not direct. You're talking about it, but you're not talking about it. You're listening to either the music or you can even talk about something on the news, as you mentioned
mm-hmm.
earlier. Use a current event. And what do you think about that? And just listen.
Yeah.
Because sometimes our anxiety can come up as parents.
You start drilling the points. Yeah.
Right, because you just so bad want them to think your way.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so if you just be patient and allow them to, and then start showing them the inconsistencies
yeah.
or the contradiction in their belief system
mm-hmm.
by asking them questions versus make statements. So when
right.
we're coaching parents, we're teaching them to ask a lot more questions and to make statements, because when they're a teen, they're little people. They already have their own values and their beliefs and their thoughts about certain things. Mm-hmm. But the good thing is that as parents, you're still the number one influence.
Yes.
Until they are out of your house and they're paying their own bills, you still have, the influence changes over time.
Right.
But 16 and under parents are still shown to be the number one influence on their child's life.
Yeah. So it gets back to the basics again, having that connection with your child. So now, what advice would you have for teens who are dealing with an abusive situation?
So the advice that I would have for teens is to first find someone in their circle that they trust. Mm-hmm. Because we are sick as our secrets. So a lot of times they'll keep those things to themselves and they don't share it because of embarrassment and shame. And parents sometimes don't like that advice because the person that they trust may not be their parents. So it may be a trusted friend, or it actually can be a trusted teacher or someone else. But the first thing is to be able to go to someone who that they trust and share this information with and not worry about what they think, because they need to know what's going on. And the reason why I give that advice out is because that trusted person who really cares for us can think a little bit clearer for us than we can do for ourselves in those situations. And potentially that person can be the one to go out and ask for help. Mm-hmm. You know, there's hotlines, there's counseling centers where they can call and say anonymously, you know, I have this situation, what do I do? This is my community, this is where I live, and this is what's going on. Having some type of professional help them, because they can't just leave the situation, especially if it's toxic and it's unhealthy, because the leaving part can activate some other levels of losing control, which can actually bring on more violence in those relationships. Well, we call it a safety plan. They have to have a safety plan, because eventually where we're getting them to is a complete cutoff. They have to go through a certain detox process so that they don't keep coming back. Because many times we'll see people, whether it's on television or our own friends, or teens will say their own friends, where, why does she keep going back to that?
Right.
You know, so there's a pattern that happens, and that's why that psychological bond has to be broken.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So also for friends of friends who are watching this, mm-hmm. be that friend.
Yes.
Sound the alarm, like you said. Get help for them. Because they're not in there. Maybe right mind at times.
Right. You'll never regret reaching out and trying to get your friend help. They may be upset.
Right.
But you will regret if something was to ever happen to them and you said nothing.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And you said a safety plan. That's so, so, so important, because we often hear those stories.
Yes.
Like you mentioned with your sister, who she was harmed getting out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so you never know, what, like you said, what a person would do when they're desperate to mm-hmm. keep you there. They've lost that control.
Mm-hmm.
So have, you know, get them that plan, or once you get help and find the resources for them, have a safe way out.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Important.
Yes, yes, yes. So give us some resources. What are these hotlines and websites?
Sure.
How to find you.
So one place where we have all that information is on our website at www.lifecounselingsolutions.com. Mm-hmm. And we can also, if you don't have access to that, you can call the office and we'll be glad to send you that information. You can reach us at 407-622-1770. That's Life Counseling Solutions.
Right. And you're doing great things in the community around building healthy relationships.
Yes. So we have a signature group for young women called Women Redeem. Mm-hmm. And this is not women that have, again, problems in relationship. These are women that have patterns. They've been in one relationship after another that has some level of unhealthiness or abuse in those relationships. And what we found is that one way that women or young women are successful in getting out of these relationships is through their support system.
That's right.
Because one of the things we'll find is that women in these situations also get isolated from family and friends, and they don't have that one sounding board. So when things happen, they're alone, and then which would make them more susceptible to going back, because then he becomes or she becomes their all.
Yeah. And then we talked about that guilt and shame. Absolutely.
Right. That it's a cycle. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely a factor. So thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Ms. Lacey, for giving us all this great information today to help our teens realize what a healthy relationship is and realize if they're in an abusive situation, how to get out, how parents can help, how friends can help. Just wonderful. Very informative.
Yes.
Thank you for listening. Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode and learned something today to promote health and well-being in children. Let me know by subscribing to the podcast on drcandicemd.com and iTunes or SoundCloud. Feel free to leave me comments and questions. You never know, they may be on the show. Also, follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you would like for me to be involved with your kid-related event or be a health expert on air or in print, please feel free to contact me at info@drcandicemd.com. Thanks for listening. We'll kid around soon.